The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
This episode of Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part by BetOnline.ag. Hey, football season is upon us, folks. Are you looking for a place to make your online wagers? Then head to BetOnline.ag to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Use promo code PODCAST1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts.
The following program is a PODCAST1.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah!
Hell yeah!
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the main streets of Los Angeles, California today. And yesterday, as it was Sunday, I drove down to the valley to talk to Sean Waltman, a.k.a. X-Pac. He had been down there doing some signings in Chicago, Illinois. And yes, to everybody that lives in the great state of Illinois, I actually know that it's pronounced Illinois. I just do that to mess with people. So anyway, Sean was down there in Chicago, Illinois, doing a personal appearance. And he flew back that same evening. So I said, hey, man, why don't I come out to the valley rather than you come over here to the main streets of Marina Del Rey, and I'll make it easy on you. So I got in my SUV, and I headed down to Sean's place. And then we shot the shit for a little bit. Just talked about a bunch of random stuff. Covered some bases in the world of pro wrestling. And just kind of caught up. Just chewing the fat, if you will. So my conversation on the podcast today is with X-Pac, good friend of mine for a long ass time. And Sean and myself never really traveled together, but we were kind of always on the same page with respect to, you know, the business, psychology, angles, heat, getting over, stuff like that. Two completely different style workers. Obviously, X-Pac, Sean was a little bit more of an athlete than myself. I only had about two or three moves. He had a bunch of moves, including his Bronco Buster, which, as we know, kind of jacked him up a while back, way back in the day. But anyway, I always enjoy talking with the guys that have been around the business for a long time. And Sean got a start in the wrestling business at a very young age, and has always kind of been a student of the game, and still keeps in touch with a lot of things going on the indie scene, with WWE, some New Japan stuff. And kind of had this, a lot of the same thoughts on the NXT TakeOver pay-per-view from Brooklyn and SummerSlam as well. But anyway, I'm shooting a breeze today on the podcast with Sean Waltman. Appreciate Sean for having me over to his crib and giving me a little bit of his day. And I'll tell you what, as I sit here right now at 317 Gimmick Street, I'm already getting ready to head out of town. And when I head out of town here in a couple of days, I'll be going down to the BSR 2.0 in Nevada for a couple of days, and I'll be continuing my packing to go on my antelope hunt with my brother-in-law Mitch at Nevada Hunting Services, and looking forward to it. He took his daughter out, and they got a real nice antelope. He went out, shot a really nice antelope, and hell, if I get something to do, if I don't, I don't, but I'm looking forward. I'm going to take my Kawasaki Brute Force 750, because I hear we're going to be in some real rocky terrain and pretty treacherous, so I'll put a gun rack on my Brute Force and get ready to go out there, and we'll see what we see. Hunting in Nevada is a whole different ball game than hunting in Texas, and it's real interesting, because the pronghorn antelope is the fastest animal in North America. And coming from the antelope family, back when I owned the Broken Skull Ranch and back when I owned another ranch right outside of Burney, Texas, outside of San Antonio, I had some black buck antelope. Now, since it's an antelope, it's related to the pronghorn. And the thing about the antelope is, as fast as they are, as nimble as they are, if you have 5 foot of fence, they won't jump a fence. An antelope would rather go under a fence. And that's a whole different ball game from the whitetail and maybe the mule deer even. But the whitetail will jump over damn near anything. The antelope, as fast as they are, you figured they would jump too. But they don't like to jump. They will climb under shit. So anyway, this will be my first antelope hunt. I don't know exactly what all it will entail, my first hunt. I will do a podcast with my brother-in-law, Mitch, once I get over to his place, and we'll be hunting a particular unit that's not too far from his house. So we'll probably take our vehicles with the four-wheelers in the back of the trucks, and then a couple coolers if we get something. So I'm looking forward to packing up. It's going to be a lot different than the trip I had this past, November, December. I went on my mule deer hunt up there in Unit 034, about 80 miles north of Winnemucca. And it was colder than shit back then. And he was telling me about his last hunting trip with a client, and it was about 103 or 104 degrees. So if it gets up to 103 or 104 degrees while my hunt is going on, I'll probably burst into flames because I have been working on trying to fine-tune my Broken Skull Ranch Cadillac Margarita. I was just on YouTube because everybody's been asking me, Steve, what's your formula? What's your recipe for your damn margarita? And this recipe was given to me by the people that I go hang out with them a lot. And I've since taken the formula and kind of tweaked it to my taste buds. And I think it's a better margarita than the recipe that they gave me. But in watching YouTube, I'm watching all these people with 70, 80, 63,000 views. How to make a margarita, how to make a Cadillac margarita. And man, I just don't agree with a lot of the techniques that I'm seeing out there. And then one of the mistakes that I'm seeing some of these people make is, man, when you mix that margarita, you've got to shake those rocks inside a shaker, a tumbler, whatever you call it, and then use fresh rocks when you're pouring your drink out. And some people, man, I don't know, they're just all over the place. But I am going to dial my recipe in, and I'll drop it on you guys. Tonight I'm doing a podcast with Ted Fowler 361. I'm going to be working on my formula probably during the podcast, or I'll already have my formula made and be testing it out while I'm talking to Ted Fowler 361 for the Thursday Unleashed show. But I will be giving this recipe out as soon as I make a few more tweaks on it, because I want this to be the ultimate margarita that anybody has ever drank. And yesterday I was at the liquor store, and normally I like Patron Silver in my margaritas. And the lady there at the liquor store talked me into this real smooth-ass tequila, higher end. It was about $48 for a fifth. That's pretty damn high. And Patron's high as well, but I actually preferred just a little bit of that kick or that harshness the Patron had rather than that smooth-ass stuff that's really good for sipping. I didn't think it made the margarita kick enough, so I'm back on Patron. Almost any tequila will work, but I'm a silver guy for my tequilas. I might try a Reposado tonight as I'm mixing around talking to Ted Fowler. But nonetheless, I will have this recipe out in a few days or a week or so, whatever it takes to dial it in. And I've got it pretty damn dialed in, but in watching those YouTube videos, man, I was watching, people do, people are using orange juice and triple sec and Grand Marnier are kind of orange liqueurs. But anytime I'm at a bar or at an airport or at a restaurant and I see someone pouring orange juice in my margarita, I already know it ain't going to be worth a shit because I just do not use orange juice. You say, well, Steve, you just said triple sec and Grand Marnier and those are orange liqueurs. Yeah, they are. And I use a dose of them, but it ain't like orange juice. Man, if I'm drinking orange juice, it's going to be with vodka and that's going to be a screwdriver. Ain't no damn orange juice a part of my recipe or my formula. But nonetheless, I got a lot to talk about with Sean Waltman. We're just sitting there kind of shooting shit, spitballing and hanging out. He was dead dog tired from coming back from Chicago, Illinois. And I'm focused right now on getting this podcast in, talking with Ted Fowler 361 tonight. I ask you guys to send in questions to questions@steveaustinshow.com to give us some topics to talk about. And with Ted Fowler, you never know what you're going to get. I know we could be talking about blue panties, but it's also just recently the 1-year anniversary of when Hurricane Harvey slammed into Rockport and devastated that whole city, the whole South Texas region, all the way up there into the Houston area. Everything was underwater, but Rockport was hit the hardest. And I'll never forget talking to Ted when we did that podcast after Harvey. Man, he was not ready to do the podcast. He doesn't even remember what we talked about because I really believe he had PTSD because of how just traumatized he was by the deal, how shook up he was, just completely overcome and flabbergasted by the devastation. And I think the dude had PTSD, man. And so it's been a year. He's been working his ass off. Business is booming, obviously, as everybody down there is still trying to rebuild. And it's going to be interesting to talk to him, but who knows what the subject's going to be. Who knows what you guys have sent in to my email. But nonetheless, Ted Fowler will be joining me on the podcast Thursday. And before we get to my guest today, which is Sean Waltman, listen up. The sports betting scene is currently hotter than it's ever been. And the best part is that our friends at BetOnline have partnered with us here at Podcast One Sportsnet to get you in on the action. These are our go-to guys, the guys we trust for all things betting. Lines, odds, wagers, inside info, you name it. And wouldn't you know it, football season is coming up fast. If you want in on some of that sweet NFL and college football action, then betonline.ag is your main destination. Head over to betonline.ag and use promo code PODCAST1. That's PODCAST and the number one to receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. One more time, betonline.ag and use promo code PODCAST1 to start winning with your online sportsbook experts.
From the mind of Martellus Bennett.
Once you pass 21, your birthdays are done.
It's Revenge of the Jocks on Podcast One.
Once you pass 23, you can't take me to Benihana's.
A no-holds-barred show about all the things that shape our world and culture.
I want to go to Africa. I've never been. I want to go full Jumanji. I'm Robin Williams and Jumanji.
I think that's like in South America, though.
Revenge of the Jocks with Martellus Bennett.
It's like trying to have sex the first time and getting it all wrong.
I think I'll keep trying.
On Podcast One and wherever you listen to podcasts. This is the Steve Austin Show.
All right, I'm sitting over here at Sean Waltman's apartment. Sean, where in the hell are we?
We're in Sherman Oaks.
Dude, why'd you move?
You mean from Encino?
Yeah.
Oh, I just needed to change. You know, change. That was just my, like when I first came out here to LA, that was like a temporary spot over there. That was one of Maria Menounos' house.
Oh, okay. Man, so, I started driving over here, man, and I've been living in Los Angeles now for about 15 years.
Yeah.
But I never really leave the West Side or Marina Del Rey. Or, I'm driving out of town, but I never go to all the different neighborhoods. You know your way around L.A.? Because I always rely on Sirius.
Sure.
I mean, Siri, whatever her name is.
Whatever, right?
Sirius, yeah, any kind of on Siri.
GPS. Yeah, I learned my way around here, like back, in the early 2000s when I lived here. But I was a West Side, lived in the Marina, too, over there all that time. And I never pictured myself living here in the Valley, but I dig it now.
Yeah, but, dude, I used to see you all the time at the World Gym back when it was the World Gym. These days, it's a Firestone Walker Brewery. And you would come in there and train every now and then. A lot of times I'd catch you there, over there at nighttime.
Yeah.
So why'd you get out of West Side?
Well, when I got out of L.A. completely, right after that, because, I left here with my tail between my legs.
I really, we don't got to go into details on that, but I know what you speak of.
Yeah.
So when you made your comeback, how'd you decide to come? You was in Encino, and you come out here.
That's just, okay, where I do my show is over here, about 3 miles from here in North Hollywood. And Maria Menounos and Kevin Undergaro, who are my executive producers and part of my support system and circle of people out here, they're all here in, Encino and, other parts of the Valley. So it just makes sense.
Man, you're still bashing it out here. I've been married for, I've been married for about 9 years. We've been together about 14 years, give or take. Dude, how is life for you out here? I mean, are you hitting comedy clubs? I never see you. And that's the thing about when people live in L.A., at least, I'm a hermit and I'm a homebody and I'm married. Shit, I'm just a stick in the mud.
Yeah.
Dude, what do you do for kicks around here?
Lately, I've just been kind of a hermit myself. But when I first got back out here, I was at the Rainbow down on Sunset a couple times a week, I'd be hanging out with Glenn Danzig or guy Sebastian Bach, different people, just doing that thing. And then when I got arrested, at the airport, when they said that I was trafficking meth.
Yeah.
So I just kind of said, you know what? I need to focus on things. And, even though I knew I didn't do anything, but still, that was a hell of a speed bump in the road when it happened. So I just figured I'm going to just rein everything in. And not that I was going out doing anything wrong, but I just like to just chill now. And I started dating again a little bit. I took 2 years off from that, Steve.
Did you take a oath of celibacy?
I did. Well, not an oath, but I didn't. When I took 2 years off, I took 2 years off of everything. No messing around, nothing.
2 years off a lot of things, but that's one thing that I don't know that I could take 2 years off of.
Most people would say the same thing as you, and I agree. It's just, for me, at that point,
that's when you're in your head and all that stuff.
Yeah, because when you're coming up out of being all, you know, messed up, like especially drugs and alcohol and all that, and the reasons why we do those things, you know, we tend to cling to relationships just like another drug. So I had to make sure, you know, that's not what I was going to do before I started dabbling again.
Hey, man, you brought up two names because I'm a big rock and roll fan.
Yeah.
Of course, Sebastian Bach, lead singer of Skid Row, and, of course, Danzig, a long time ago, part of the Misfits. And then obviously as Glenn Danzig.
Not just part of the Misfits. Well, yeah. He started the Misfits.
But as Glenn Danzig, I mean, his greatest success. When I first came to L.A. many years ago, I went to a Danzig concert, and Superjoint Ritual was playing.
Yeah.
And that was with Phil Anselmo, who was singing for them. He was
crazy
gone.
Phil. Yep.
He was out of his mind that night, and there was another band there, which I can't remember. But I remember hanging around Glenn all before, you know, he was about to go on stage, and he crushed it. He was the main event. He knocked it out of the park. I know that dude's big into like anime, comic books.
He has his own comic book line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like kind of like erotica.
Yeah.
But he's a really smart guy. But I remember hanging around him, dude. He was into zero alcohol and zero drugs.
That's right.
And he's still like that?
Yes. Now, like, so, but on an occasion, like, so I get together with him on a Christmas or a New Year's. And, like, see, I don't drink either. But I would I'll have a little bit of sake with them or share some champagne. Like he's not ready to, on occasion,
okay,
you know, have a little bit. But for the most part, you know, as a general rule, yeah, he's straight and narrow now.
So when you see that guy, dude, what's the conversation about? Because I never really knew that, what kind of music you were into.
I'm into all kinds of stuff. I know, Glenn and I are friends, not based on anything having to do with music. He loves wrestling and he loves martial arts, and you know, so we talk a lot about you know, Japanese wrestling. He's fascinated with all that stuff.
Is he into MMA?
Yeah, well, not so much. He's, you know, more into the traditional martial arts.
You know who Glenn Danzig reminds me of?
Who?
Bret Hart.
That's a man. I never even thought of that. A lot, yeah.
A whole lot,
yeah.
Dude, it's been a long time since I've seen Glenn, but kind of reserved, quiet, kind of introspective.
Yeah.
But obviously, you know, a little bit of ego. I mean.
Oh, yeah, quite a little bit. I think I like that.
Well, I know, but I mean, you can't be in entertainment business if you ain't got some type of ego.
Yep.
Because you're probably not going to go very far.
Yeah.
But he reminds me a lot of Bret Hart.
Yeah, I definitely see that.
Sebastian Bach now, he's a little bit on the wild side.
He is, yeah. But not nearly like he was back. You remember, did you see that reality show they did with Ted Nugent, him, and I forget who else. Anyways, it was a super band reality show.
No, I didn't.
He was off his mind.
I never watched it. Was it good?
I thought so, yeah.
What happened to it?
I don't know. It's just Sebastian was really off the chain and that. And he's reined it in a lot.
Oh, yeah. But we're talking about, you know, Skid Row, god dang, are they even still touring?
Those guys and Sebastian, I don't know if they'll ever do anything together again.
Dude, what's the deal with bands and the breakups? Dude, when the shit hits the fan with bands, look at the Eagles. He was one of the greatest bands of all time. Whatever genre of music it is, they're one of the top-selling bands of all time. Towards the end, those guys hated each other's guts.
Yeah.
When they did the Hell Freezes Over tour, and then after that, I mean, it's five different jets flying to a location so they could get on stage and make some money and then go their separate ways.
Yep. I mean, Fleetwood Mac right now, they're touring without Lindsey Buckingham because of that shit.
Yeah.
Excuse my language. I'm sorry.
No, yeah, it's fine.
Even Glenn Danzig, he swore, God, that and Misfits would never get back together.
Jerry Only came by the crib a couple of years ago. And then when they got together, they just came to L.A. several months ago, and they were supposed to come on the podcast. Glenn and Jerry was going to be there. But I was in Nevada on a hunting trip, so I missed the boat.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been pretty epic to have both those guys
pretty
on.
Pretty badass.
Is there, when I get on the radio these days, like I said, dude, I'm a stick in the mud. I can't listen. I don't say I can't listen to. I just don't listen to anything new. When I'm working out in the gym, dude, I'm on Pandora Radio, and I'm listening to the same shit that I was listening to in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. I'm just stuck here.
Yeah.
Are you stuck here in a time warp with me, or are you digging into the new stuff?
I don't. I know very little about the newer stuff, Steve. And it's not because I don't care about music. It's just, I think it's just kind of like you're saying, you know? I just haven't exposed myself to it. And I'm sure it's fine. I'm sure it's good. It's just, you know, I'm fine with the stuff I go to.
So if you're going to listen to something and you're training or driving down the road, what would it be?
Ooh. Damn.
Your silence. Dude, because here's the thing.
I don't listen to music while I'm training.
Do what?
I don't listen to music while I'm training.
You don't?
I don't, no. I don't know.
You know what?
I don't wear earphones, nothing. I just go in there and just I just get it done, and I get the hell out of there, Steve.
Are you thinking about what you're doing? Are you got a mind-muscle connection going? Are you just going through the motions, say, hey, man, let me train so I can just get out of here and get my swell on?
No, the truth is...
It's therapeutic for you.
It's therapeutic, and I'm actually thinking about other things as I'm training. Like, my mind's wandering, and like, I'm going through different things, and... In my head, working things out in my head, you know, just about different things in life.
Where are you training?
Over here at over here at the.
You ain't got to give me a location for people who want to try to find you.
Oh, okay.
but it's the gym, right?
Yeah, yeah. 24-hour fitness.
All of a sudden, someone comes up to you, they recognize you, or it's, you know, one of your people that you kind of hang with.
Yeah.
But now you're in the gym. You're trying to get your workout on. Your mind's wandering. You're kind of brainstorming.
Yeah.
How are you about people approaching you, whether they're friends, fans, or whatever, and all of a sudden you have an hour dedicated to your workout, and now you got someone chewing your ear off. Where do you stand on that?
I participate quite often. I just, you know, it's easy. I get distracted easy, and I'm happy to meet people and talk to them. And yeah, sometimes it's an inconvenience, but you know, like if I don't do the headphone thing, and like, you know, if I make eye contact with people, I'm kind of inviting it, you know. So
it's a kind of that awkward feeling, because it's like, man, you want to recognize people,
yeah,
right? But like. I'm real bad at, well, I train in my garage, so I don't have to worry about it. But back in the day when I used to go to Gold's, dude, it's so hard to train at Gold's because everybody wants to talk.
And you know, like, half the people in there probably,
oh, I know, and
right?
It's a blast to talk, yeah, to everybody. But if you have an hour, or if you just have one block of time, and that's when you get your swell on, I mean, if you're going to sit there and talk for 40 minutes, yeah, out of your hour, you don't have much of a workout.
That's exactly what it was like. At the gym in Plymouth, Minnesota, the gym, you know, the Road Warriors gym, that was what it was like going in there, and especially when Jesse Ventura was in there. I mean, I wouldn't even get a workout in. I'd just say, F it, you know. We just talk about just all kinds of craziness.
All right, listen up. We're in the middle of baseball season with the sports betting scene as hot as it's ever been. Now's the time to get in on the action. BetOnline.ag has partnered with us here at Podcast One Sportsnet to be our go-to guys that we trust for all things betting. Lines, odds, wagers, inside info, you name it. And heck, football season is right around the corner. If you want in on some of that sweet NFL and college football action, then betonline.ag is your main destination. Head over to betonline.ag and use promo code PODCAST1. That's PODCAST and the number one to receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. One more time, betonline.ag and use promo code PODCAST1 to start winning with your online sportsbook experts. You were just in Chicago,
yeah,
and I called you up. We and me been talking on the phone for a couple of days. I said, hey, man, you around to do a podcast? And he said, yeah. So I called you, and you was in Chicago. You flew back last,
yeah,
night.
I was actually on the plane, getting ready to get on the plane.
I appreciate you taking my call. So how was the show? What were you doing? Were you wrestling?
No. I just had a in-store signing at Pro Wrestling Tees. They have a really cool retail store set,
yeah,
up.
Ryan was telling about it. Yeah. Up a store out there.
Yeah, it's really nice, man. Wow. They made it look like a Hot Topic inside there. And so that was nice. And, like, they have this, they have their own little wrestling crate thing.
Yeah.
And so, like, I did some stuff the night before for the wrestling crate, because I signed 3,000 things in 3 hours. That's how fast I can sign shit.
Jesus Christ.
So that's 3, one, that's one every 2 seconds. Bam, bam, bam.
Can you read it?
Yeah, it's good. I just have a really good, easy autograph.
back when I was trying to sign those autographs, it was just 316, and I was I'd already eliminated the Austin, and I damn sure eliminated Stone Cold Steve Austin. It was just too long of a damn autograph. But at the last one at WrestleCon at 34, I was signing Stone Cold Steve Austin, and I was like, dude, man, I got to get a shorter name.
Yeah.
How much are you traveling with doing wrestling and stuff like that? Are you still in the ring?
I still am. It's just more and more, Steve, I'm not going to lie. Like, it's getting to not be fun. Like, because
there's not fun about it. I was watching you walk up the stairs because I'm over at Sean's place, and I was walking up the stairs behind him, and I was using the guardrail to pull my ass up because my knees ain't worth the shit. I was watching your bow-legged ass walk up the stairs.
How did I look?
A couple years ago, you was moving around a little bit better. How you feeling?
Well, right now I'm a little stiff, and I haven't been as active. I'm just going to be honest. Like, I haven't been training as much. And I haven't been as strict on what I put in my body. So I might let some gluten into my food intake.
You look great. Did you
yeah, but the inflammation in the joints.
Oh, okay.
From the sugar, a little bit.
Hey, man, that's one of the biggest things. I was talking with a dude, I think it was Mark Bell or someone else, about that, with either carbs or sugar, and talking about all this inflammation.
Yeah.
I just never been a big inflammation guy. I don't really get it. So what is it that you're feeling?
But you've had normal aches and pains, right? Or no, not so bad.
I'm not really in pain. I just move slower.
Okay. Yeah, no, but there's – I think it's – I'm going to assume it's probably like the same type of those feelings that everybody feels.
Yeah.
You know, when their knees hurt and, you know, as they're getting older, it's just that I notice it. Like, I'm more in tune with my body. So, like, I notice, okay, when I slip on my food intake, okay, yeah, I'm waking up and my nose is stuffed up and my knees hurt a little bit. My back might be a little stiffer. Oh, and also flying coast to coast doesn't help either.
So if you was on your program, what would you be eating?
Just
or staying away from?
Anything like with wheat, you know, like and dairy.
Do you eat out all the time or are you cooking?
I cook at home most of the time. Because I
cooking chicken or steaks, what?
Grass-fed ground beef is my go-to. Like, I'll take a pound, and I get this stuff called Mishivna or something like that. It's actually a Wagyu ground beef, like Japanese. And I cook the whole break it up into little fours, and I cook it medium rare, and then I use it throughout the day. And I just eat like raw vegetables, you know, spinach, things like that. And I start adding a little rice. A little bit of rice.
But not too many carbs.
No.
Carbs blow you up?
Yeah, but I feel like I needed a little bit of carbs back in there because I was starting to feel sucked up, Steve.
Dude, what are you doing with your training routine? Are you able to lift heavy anymore?
Not right now.
Heavy?
No, because I have I have this, you know, the pec tear and the pec tendon. Like, so
dude,
I just.
How frustrating is that?
It's really frustrating.
How do you train around it?
I just do the movements. And I do lighter weights and higher reps. Eventually, you know, the other muscles kind of, you know, overcompensate. So I just do it higher reps. I'll do one set of 30 reps if I can crank out 30.
You go to gym every day?
No. Once a week, maybe.
Really?
Yeah, right now. But I can do squats. I do 30, 30, 30. Like I'll do 30 wheel,
yep.
30 push-ups,
yep.
And then 30 of the – I have a rubber band thing that I use, and I'll do my biceps real – and I just crank it out real quick.
Dude, you remember – yeah, I lived a lot lighter than I used to. I never trained super heavy to begin with or even heavy to begin with because, you know, I wasn't that strong like some of the boys are. But I'll never forget when I was living in Denton, Texas. You remember the Missing Link?
Yeah, I love the Missing Link.
Oh, man.
Dewey Robertson. He was an awesome guy.
He was a bomb back in the
day. Yeah.
And he trained at the same gym that I trained at. It was like machines and stuff like that. And there was a free weight bench, and he would train on that. When he trained chest, he would get on the bench. He'd put a quarter on each side, only a quarter. dude, that's 95 pounds. That's,
yeah.
And he would just very strict, just go up and down, up and down. I wasn't counting his reps.
Like real slow negatives?
Not even super slow, just perfect form, up and down, regular cadence, uh-huh. no bounce. And as you can imagine, obviously, dude could bench more than 95 pounds for a lot of reps. But he just did super strict. I don't know. I never met him. I never talked to him. I never, you know, before you knew it, he was out of there. You know, of course, since he's passed away. But I didn't know, you know, and he was always shredded. And dude, that's pretty good genetics to begin with.
Yeah. Because
he had somewhat of a physique. You know, and I think it could have been some growth in there because he was
sure
super shredded. But, dude, he just stayed in there. And I'm always scared, like, okay, if I'm going to start lifting lighter, I'm going to lose a bunch of muscle mass. Dude, that dude lifted light as a feather and maintained everything that he had.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way I'm doing a lot of my training now, man. Just I don't even count sets of reps anymore. I just kind of train until, okay.
Do you even know what you're going to do before you go into the gym,
Steve? Yeah, I kind of do, just because I kind of got my head, you know, if I'm going to train in like chest and shoulders
yeah.
one day, and then I'll do back, and then I'm going to do arms, and then I'm going to do legs. I'm going to take a day off in theory. Most often I won't take that day off, and I'll just go back to the same cycle and repeat.
Yeah.
So it's like I ain't worried about overtraining because, well, shit, I'm not pushing myself like a bastard like back in the old days.
Yeah.
But I'm just trying to maintain everything. Are you doing any kind of cardio?
No. No. Just the Hindu squats. So, yeah, like
but how are you doing when you do get back in the ring?
I'm fine. You know, just, I mean, for what I have to do.
Trade secrets from being a veteran of the squirt. So
yeah.
Staying relaxed, knowing your shit.
Yes, and like, you know, like I put my matches together where I have little bursts.
Right.
And then, you know, and like there's short bursts, like where there's a payoff, and then there's a little break, you know, a little time for me to rest. And, you know, it's not that hard to do, especially in a tag match. And
who you work with on tag matches?
It's me and the local guy, like their local baby face. When I go in there, get a little rub, and then we work with a couple of you know, their local guys that can just, you know, try to make us look good. Here's the problem, what I was getting at earlier,
yep.
is that a lot of times the guys I'm working with, and sometimes they can't help it. They just are green and inexperienced, but it doesn't go well. And like the, you know, I can just go do the appearance part and still get plenty of work, Steve. Like I don't need to go like do the actual matches and get that tease of like, oh, I'm gonna get my fix, yeah. and then like, nope, psych, because they screw my hot tag up. So, yeah, it's frustrating, man. I'm not going to lie.
What do the people want to see on the indie circuit right now from you? Trademark stuff?
Yes. Greatest hits. Medley of my greatest hits. Like when I went to see George Jones back in the day. But I mean, he was older, but,
oh, yeah.
you know, like he did it that way.
I never forget, we was in Indiana somewhere. We were staying at the Holiday Inn. It was the Holiday Inn that Larry Bird owned. And the shot was about 100 miles away, and George Jones was playing a doubleheader with Merle Haggard.
Damn.
And that was one of the first times I didn't know show. I went ahead and did my gig because I was with WCW, and of course I'd never skip out on a gig. But if
you didn't know show for no show Jones,
dude, I'll never forget Paul Bear, bless his heart. He was the biggest George Jones fan in the world, and he went and saw
yeah,
him
he was.
A personal appearance. And I'm not an autograph guy, but I asked, Paul, you think you can get George's signature for me? And sure enough, you know, on George's book, I Live to Tell It All, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I read the book, and he took my book and got it signed for me. So I got something from the possum.
Hell yeah.
But damn sure, I almost no-showed so I could go see.
I can understand.
Jones.
I can understand.
Hey, man, shifting to the wrestling scene, you and I were talking the other day. It was just SummerSlam, and then NXT TakeOver was in Brooklyn again. And I asked you, I said, man, did you see that tag match between the Undisputed Era and the Mustache Mountain?
Yeah.
And you'd kind of watched parts of it.
I saw when you and I talked at that point, I had only seen like the last 5 minutes.
But you rewatched it.
I did. Yeah.
Dudes crush it or what?
I mean, and yeah, come on. That's next level stuff right there, Steve, in my opinion.
Dude, the one kid's 21 years old.
I've been like, I saw that kid. Talking about Tyler Bate, right?
Yeah.
I seen him when he's like 16 years old in Chikara, like at 16. And like, to me, that kid's one of the strongest people I've seen in wrestling pound for pound. He had a like 260, 280 pound guy up in a fireman's carry and the guy in the giant swing at the same time. Yeah. And the kid's like 5'6" and 170 pounds. Yeah. And doing it and like rotations.
He started when he was real young. Dude, when I met you,
yeah,
you'd been in the business how long?
That was like 1991 when I met you.
Yeah.
I had started in 88.
How old were you?
15.
About the same, probably the same story as this kid.
Similar, but I think him even a little younger, maybe.
What did you think about the difference between the NXT type presentation versus the main roster presentation? Just as far as the way the shows looked or felt.
I mean, you know, they're the same company, but man, it was night and day for to me personally. Like, it's just they know their fan base. Like, they have it's a little bit different of a fan base, and it's easier for them to cater to them because they're not trying to, I think, maybe, you know, cater to everyone and every demographic. Like, I don't know. Like, it's, I like how they present the storyline they do. It's they're nice and simplistic on how they present everything. You don't got to do a lot of, it doesn't rack your brain. It's easy to follow. Like I like the characters, and it's just, what was that, 5 matches they had on that show?
Yeah, that was it.
That was great. I think that's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and then like, okay, there's a lot of people on that roster, but you got to fight to be on that show. You got to be like one of the best guys to be on that takeover show, right?
Or best girls.
Or best.
Man,
that's why, right, yeah.
Crushed it.
As good as anyone out there.
Kyrie, I'm going to mess her name up again. I call her Kyrie Sane.
Yeah.
And Shayna Baszler ripped it up.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were in my opinion, that was the toughest spot of the night.
Like, explain that, because I was watering my yard when we were talking about this, and yeah, I didn't even consider the spot.
Well, like, to me, that spot would have been, like, the match that's after intermission, which is usually, like, you know, it's really hard to get them because...
Yeah, they just came back
from yeah,
all their shit. Not everybody's there.
Yeah.
It's a cool-off type period.
Yeah.
That's what you mean.
Yes, and the match that they followed, like, just had some amazing stuff. Some of the most amazing stuff you'll see in wrestling, yeah, right? Ricochet and Adam Cole with that moonsault super kick to the face, and man, it's just a really tough spot. That's all, like, you know, to be able to follow that, and those ladies followed it like big time.
To me, when I watch the NXT stuff, I rarely watch NXT because you got to watch it on the network.
Yeah,
and so most time, you know, I DVR SmackDown and I DVR Raw, and I don't always watch them, but if someone says, hey, man, you got to check us out, I'll go back and watch it. So I'm kind of out of tune with the product. But the thing I like about the NXT thing is it's almost like you said, the main roster is almost trying to cover or cater to everybody.
Yeah.
And to me, the NXT thing is more, I know that they're both under the same umbrella. It's WWE. It's sports entertainment.
Yeah.
It ain't pro wrestling no more. It's
right,
sports entertainment officially. So, but in my mind, it's still pro wrestling. And to me, in NXT...
still resembles pro wrestling, right?
Yeah. It's kind of like a throwback.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's all modern stuff. Everybody, yeah, you know, it's great lighting, great production values, everything else. But it's a little... the storylines are very easy to understand and very, very simple. And the audience, I mean, the announcers aren't trying to go overboard, trying to explain all this,
yeah,
these things that are going on. And to me, man, I mean, that's wrestling when it's best.
Yeah.
Is just, if you go back to old Mid-South, well, you probably grew up on AWA.
I grew up on Championship Wrestling from Florida.
That's right. That's, yeah, right. But still, this same shit.
Yeah.
World class, it doesn't matter. NWA, dude, all the storylines were really friggin' simple. You had a heel and baby, there was an altercation or a personal issue on top of a belt or a heated feud, and that was it.
Yeah.
And so sometimes when I watch the main roster stuff, it's just like they're trying to play to so many people that the storylines get kind of convoluted, overlapped. And
I don't even know, like, Steve, I didn't even know that Charlotte was a baby face and Becky Lynch was the heel on SummerSlam.
Right.
And when Becky turned, you know, on her, like, she got that huge babyface reaction. Like, I didn't even know what was going on. Like, I don't
you
know.
Watch every Monday?
No, and I shouldn't have to be able to watch pay-per-view. Like, I shouldn't feel lost.
Right.
Like, there should be something that, like, gets me up to speed, at least.
Dude, how do you explain? If you haven't watched the show in a long time, nor have I, but then all of a sudden you're watching the match and you realize which side the gals are on. Well, it was a triple threat.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like you had a heel baby.
Right.
Or tags. You had two corners. You had three women out there. Carmella was a heel. Becky, a heel. But Charlotte's a baby. I've said this before. I'm like a broke record. I love Flair as a heel.
Yep.
He's the greatest wrestler of all time. But his heel work was outstanding. His baby work, eh. He's still Ric Flair.
He just didn't like being a baby
face. I like Ric Flair as a heel.
He didn't like being a baby face.
No, he didn't. But Charlotte, I like as a heel. Becky, I like either way.
Yeah.
But, man, when she knocked the hell out of Charlotte, that crowd came unglued.
Yeah, they did.
It was made to turn her heel. But, man, it was the biggest baby face reaction of the night.
I thought so.
I mean, people came unglued. So
yeah.
Where does she go?
That's a good question, because I think I saw them, like, put some online polls up trying to figure out where to go from there.
I just think let her be whatever the people want her to be. For her, she ain't got to be a heel or baby. She just needs to be Becky Lynch. And this is truly one of those cases where, like, where they say, well, Roman Reigns, however the people want to take him, whether they take him as heel or baby, he's just going to be Roman. To me, I just think let's take that out of the equation. Whatever they're going to do with him, they're going to do after beating Brock. But Becky ought to just be Becky, because I think there's money in Becky being Becky.
I think so.
And let the people decide.
Yeah.
As long as she's true to herself, I mean, she's going to fly as high and as far as they want her to. I don't know.
I do. I think you're right. Yeah. And, I mean, I think that some people are going to like Charlotte. Like, just let her be Charlotte, which is a heel type of thing. Anyway,
for me, Charlotte, as a defined heel.
Uh-huh.
Hey, we know this is a heel. We're pushing her as a heel. We're booking her as a heel. To me, that's how they need to do with that.
Sometimes people are going to cheer, like, just because she's great.
I think.
Just like they did Rick.
Yeah. But still.
Still, book her as a heel.
You have a defined role, and so to me, it just seems... to me, she's totally confident. And either one, but I think she's more comfortable. This is not me talking to her. This is me just guessing. Comfortable being a heel, but obviously she's going to do whatever they ask of her.
And do you see her and Ronda being the main event at WrestleMania?
Boy, that had potential to be a hell of a damn main event.
Yeah.
But then you got two babies. Would you go two babies, or would you make sure that Charlotte's a heel?
Make sure she's
Ronda
a heel.
Ronda needs to be the baby.
Yeah. Yeah. I would make sure that Charlotte's the defined heel by then. By Royal Rumble.
Dude, I said this on my other podcast. This is putting a cart in front of the horse, but what if Ronda turned heel?
Ooh, it probably wouldn't take much, would it?
No. No. Right now, people love her.
Yeah.
But I mean.
Yeah, but I mean.
When she flips the switch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't see them doing it, though.
Oh, no. It's way too soon. Plus, people genuinely really, really like
her. They're taking a chance on her by having her sit Indian style in the middle of the damn ring with their back to her opponent.
Dude,
we were
talking about that. When she started narrating.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, because you agreed with me.
Yeah.
We were on the same page because, I mean, in theory, that could have started a heel turn.
Yep.
It didn't, and that's how strong she is as a baby right now. And she's still green.
Yeah.
But she's picking it up.
I'm amazed at how, like, some of the things I see her, like her facials and different things, and like, the impressive thing to me is, like, I can tell she's staying in the moment when I'm looking. That's really hard for somebody that new.
You know, I think she's been in, I was talking with Daniel Cormier about this.
Yeah.
I think she's been in so many really, really big moments, those holy shit moments as a fighter.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's a shoot.
For real.
But I think she's been there, so I think she gets it. And one of the things that I notice about her is, like, she's when they're doing a promo or a program or something like that, she's really, really listening. A lot of times people are just listening for the other person to stop so they can start talking. There's a difference between doing that and really, really listening. I think she's really listening. and taking it all in, and then she responds accordingly.
Yeah.
Do you understand? Absolutely. A lot of people don't listen. They're just looking for the break.
Waiting for their turn to talk.
And that doesn't make for the greatest promo segment.
If people can tell, like, that's what you're doing, right?
Right.
Yeah.
One thing I hate is when people got the horn, and then it's the other person's turn to talk. And so their microphone is hanging down by their side, and someone will say something, and so the person listening will start mouthing off while the microphone is down at their side because it's not their turn to talk. But you got a microphone by your side, so if you're going to start mouthing off, pick up your microphone. But it's not your turn to talk.
That's right.
But it's a big gap, and it's a disconnect for me. It's like, come on, man. You don't ever do that. If you want to jump in and interrupt somebody's promo, interrupt it, but don't start running your mouth while you're holding a live mic in your hand and it's hanging at your side.
Yeah.
Because that makes you look dumb.
Yeah, it's silly, yeah.
These are the trade secrets that Sean Waltman and I used to always talk about.
Yeah.
When we would meet up everywhere, every now and then on the road. Hey, let's take a quick pause for the calls and give big ups to TrueCar. If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP, and you might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? And the same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for the same car you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. You're also going to need some car insurance. Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket. It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today. Oh, hell yeah. Football is back, and no one covers football like your friends here on Podcast One Sportsnet. We got you covered on a daily basis with the Dan Patrick Show and the Rich Eisen Show. And you got that competitive spirit in you? Get the latest tips and news with RJ Bell's Dream Preview and Ross Tucker's Fantasy Feast Podcast. We also have legendary coach Jim Harbaugh on Attack Each Day, the Harbaugh's Podcast. And Revenge of the Jocks with Super Bowl champion Martellus Bennett. Check out all these shows and more each week on PodcastOneSports.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. Before we get to the rest of my conversation with Sean Waltman, let me tell you how to get your feet right with Tecovas boots. Tecovas boots are handmade, high-quality boots that won't leave you broke. They only sell their cowboy boots straight from the factory to you, meaning you get a better boot for a fraction of the price. Like the cowboy boots of old, Tecovas boots are made in over 200 steps, each one meticulously carried out by hand in one of the oldest boot-making factories in the world. Soft, glove-like calfskin and ultra-comfortable exotic leathers are the Tecovas calling card, requiring little to no break-in time. I can speak for that. I got a pair myself. The best part, Tecovas takes the risk out of buying boots online with free shipping, free exchanges, and a free 30-day return policy. I had the pleasure of working with Tecovas to find the perfect fit for me. I went with the Duke, ostrich style. These are a badass, good-looking, super comfortable boot, and like we just said, doesn't really require any break-in time. You slip these boots on your feet, and you are ready to roll in high style and comfort. Right now, for listeners of the Steve Austin Show, I'm giving you the drop on my curated collection of boots and accessories exclusively at Tecovas.com/Steve. One more time, that's Tecovas.com/Steve, T-E-C-O-V-A-S, to check out my personally curated collection of boots from Tecovas Boots. Do it for your damn feet.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
What do you think the state of the business is right now?
I think it's at the beginning of a wrestling boom. It's not going to be like, I don't think it's going to be comparable to the one we went through, Steve. Because I just think the landscape is too different. But I can't help but feel that. Like, just because of, like, I'm out there, you know, and I feel the excitement that's getting picked up. And, you know, I honestly think a lot of it is the people that are frustrated with the WWE product. the ones that, you know, you're not going to please them no matter what. Maybe, I don't know. They just want to be the counterculture.
Right.
I don't know. Almost like the punk rock mentality. And I think that's kind of fueling that whole, the indie, you know, pro wrestling, like, resurgence, renaissance. I don't know what you want to call it, but, you know, I mean, there's a lot of guys out there doing well right now. Maybe not getting rich, but...
To me, it seems like the roster's coming around on the main roster. And the NXT thing is very refreshing to me because I don't watch it on a regular basis. And I got a chance to watch, man, that tag match knock it out of the park. The two women knock it out of the park. Ricochet. That roster, man, that's a bunch of hungry cats really coming up. I want to look at the main roster. There's more guys over now... within that system than there was before. So it seems like everybody's coming around, and I think it's the experience. I think it's a year or two or more has even passed, and the work is getting better. You can always improve, and there's always going to be some young guys.
Yeah.
Because it's a hurry-up system because men are trying to get, you know, more and more talent up there, get ready for the big program, for the big show, and so it is what it is. But to me now, some of the guys have been there, some of them for over 10 years. And then the other ones, you know, they're coming around going into year 5 and 6. And I still have my peccadilloes about some of the telegraphing and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that goes along with the business speeding up, like they've sped up the game of baseball, football, they're trying to hurry, uh-huh. you know, all this stuff. And it's short attention span. Theater, everybody's trying to, you know, put 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag more so than they used to. You, I don't know if you remember this. Back in the early 90s when we were going to TV tapings in WCW, I don't know where you were at the time, but the way things worked back in, dude, we'd be at Center Stage or Anderson, South Carolina, or, you know, Dothan, Alabama, or any of those
towns. Gainesville, Georgia.
Any of those towns about 100-mile striking distance from Atlanta. You go to TV, and the business was so simple back in, and you're a student of the history of the business. You know, back in the old days, you could lay in a headlock or a rear chin lock damn near all day. You could almost do that in the early 90s to a degree. But you only got, for the most part, the way WCW worked back when I was there, you got a 1-minute go-home cue. And that's why there was no really tremendous comebacks. By and large, I'm just not a blanket statement for most of the matches, unless guys were really thinking or were ahead of all the rest of the boys, which I wasn't. You got a 1-minute go-home cue. Babyface started his comeback, and you went home. You can watch that shit. There was not nearly as many false finishes back in those days as there are in the last 10 to 15 years, but especially now.
No big Pat Patterson.
Oh, no.
15-minute finishes.
Don't get me wrong. You had Eddie Graham in Florida who was doing lights out stuff, but that might have been more house show oriented. But as far as the television product, my point is that's how simple it was back then. These days, and more power to the generations that have come since you and I have been out of the game for the most part, how everything has kind of evolved. And, dude, not even Ricochet. Well, Ricochet is probably, like I said the last week on my podcast, probably the best athlete I've ever seen in a ring.
Yeah.
But
hard to argue that.
As a blanket statement, I think that the guys and girls, especially the girls, obviously, because there wasn't that many when you and me were around. Sensational Sherry. I mean, I love
Medusa. Yeah.
Oh, and then we had, you know, the generation of women that we were with. But, man, the women are obviously way better athletes. But, dude, the guys are so much more athletic than I was or Triple H was. Sean would be at the head of the class as well. You were a really good athlete. But no,
I was all right.
Ability is higher now than it was from the 70s to the 80s. And when I say that, you always had your dynamite kids, you know, people like that who were badasses and great athletes. But the athletic ability these days is they're much more well-rounded athletes than we were.
Do you think that it's because we're like the industry's attracting the world-class athletes from different sports now, or is it just the evolution of the human of human beings?
I think it's the evolution of human beings and the evolution of the business just getting a little bit more, I don't want to say acrobatic, but athletic is probably the best way I could say. Because, I mean, dude, you know, back in the day, from your Dick the Bruiser days, Crusher, man, what are the guys locking up, grabbing headlocks?
Yeah.
You know, send a guy in for a tackle, no one's going down.
Yeah.
You lock up, grab a headlock again. I mean,
yeah,
it's a whole different ball game.
Steve, I've been going back on YouTube, and somebody put up some early 80s TBS wrestling, like, you know, the stuff Gordon Soule used to commentate on, Georgia Championship Wrestling, and then it turned into World Championship Wrestling. Man, like, I was watching some of that. I've been watching a lot of it, and it's real simple and all that, and, you know, there's a lot of walking and talking in there, but man, some of that stuff is great. Like Buzz Sawyer in his early days. Wow. I have you seen any of that stuff?
No, I don't know if I know exactly what you're talking about, but I mean, I remember
it's Buzz just Sawyer. All the old shows,
dude. But Buzz Sawyer was like, this was when probably before the business got exposed. But dude, you thought Buzz Sawyer was a total shoot.
Yeah,
he was a mad dog.
Yeah,
and from the accounts that I've heard of, dude, brother wasn't all there.
No,
well, he was all over the place because of certain things, but certainly a mad dog.
Yeah,
but if you're gonna be flipping channels on TV and Buzz was on, and someone had told you wrestling was fake, you would see Buzz and go, "No, it ain't."
Yeah, not that one.
That son of a bitch is real.
Yeah, no, I don't know what brought me down, why I brought that up, but his stuff looked as good as anyone's in the business to me at that time. It was crazy.
I thought he could have been a bigger star than he was.
Yeah.
But that's the maybe reliability or personal issues. Well, that dude was a little bit out there. I'm not speaking disparagingly.
No, it's pretty well known. Yeah.
Because, dude, I mean, he jacked a couple people for some money.
Yeah, Magnum.
Yeah.
Different people. I think Taker even.
Yeah.
Jeez.
He was a little bit out there. I was on my Twitter account the other day, and I had said that I think it was Ricochet and Adam Cole had ripped it up.
Yeah.
And then I got a response back, you know, of one of these armchair quarterbacks saying, GD, Steve, if they keep doing this, where's the business? The business ain't going to be here in 15 years. I'm thinking to myself, dude.
What are you going to do?
I'm just commenting on, well, you know, how badass and precise and athletic and psychologically what a great story these guys told. And here's some guy crawling up my ass about the business going to be gone in 15 years. Business ain't going nowhere.
Yeah.
It's just going to be whatever it is.
This guy can go back on YouTube and there's all those old Georgia Championship Wrestling shows on there now. He'll love it. I don't know, Steve. I'm one of these guys. Like, look, there are things about wrestling now, and there are certain things that I'm not a fan of. But I'd like to try to be more like Terry Funk than the bitter this shit nowadays, and these guys are killing the business. Terry was never like that. If he had a criticism for anything, like, he was real good about it, and he was uplifting to all the young guys, and he wanted to help, like, you know, and he tried to evolve himself. He was doing acai moonsaults, like, you know, when he's over 50 years old. So I'd like to be more like Terry Funk than the old bitter sour grapes, this shit nowadays guy.
But see, here's the thing. I just never understood when Terry started doing all the moonsaults and the death matches and stuff like that. Because and Terry Funk is one of my all-time favorites. And if you're any kind of wrestling fan, everybody respects him. So here's a guy who was a traditional old-school wrestler.
Yep.
Well, he was second generation or third.
Second.
I know Dory Sr. wrestled. And then, you know, there was Terry and Dory Jr.
And then there was Haas Funk.
But nonetheless, you know, the Funk family is one of the great wrestling families. So,
no, I don't mean Haas Funk. I meant Jimmy Jack.
Jimmy
Sorry.
Jack Funk. I was in Portland. Yeah, that one doesn't work. But my point is, dude, old school wrestler from, you know, traditional values, and then at 50 plus starts going into the death matches.
Yeah.
I mean, because like me, that'd be like me if I decided to get back in the ring and I say, okay, well, I could wrestle, but piss on wrestling. I'm going to do the death match.
Yeah.
And start doing all the hardcore stuff. I mean, he started, you know, beating the hell out of himself. when everybody gets saying, well,
I think,
retire.
I think there are a lot of Terry Funk fans that's the only Terry Funk they know. They don't know that. They don't know that Terry Funk.
I agree with you.
So, and somebody asked Terry one time, hey, how come you didn't do moonsaults back when you, he's like, they didn't have them back then.
Who invented the moonsault?
The first person I ever saw do it live was Mudo. But like I saw, like, you know, first person I saw in the States do it was Mudo. It was on Battle of the Belts too. He worked with Denny Brown.
But that's funny to hear. Said, why did you do moonsaults back in the day?
They didn't have them.
But that's a shoot.
That's a shoot.
But then he started doing them. Dude, I'll never forget I did a moonsault off the top of the cage in Madison Square Garden.
You did?
No, I'm lying.
Oh, man, you got me, dude. I swear to God. I'm like, whoa.
God dang, but one time, here's a shoot. I was doing a ringside commentary with, I guess, Jerry Lawler and Jim Ross. And Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle were working. And, dude, it's one of those things, like, you've been up close and personal in a lot of matches. But, I mean, yeah. I'm talking about, you know, matches that you're not in. And not even standing there on the apron in a tag. But when you're just ringside doing commentary, or I've reffed a few matches, that kind of where you ain't thinking about shit, but you're just watching the match.
Yeah.
And, man, I'll never forget doing color commentary, because I guess I was going to wrestle whoever won the match. I don't remember what the storyline was. The point is, I was watching Kurt and Chris do work, and, man, they were just having this ball buster of a match, because Benoit was always a badass.
Yeah.
Legitimately tough, but just a tremendous worker, inspired by one and only Dynamite Kid. And here comes Kurt Angle, gold medal Olympic wrestler who caught a hold of the business faster than anybody in history and turned into one of the greatest of all time.
Yep.
Those dudes are out there doing work, and then all of a sudden, Kurt goes to top for that friggin' moonsault, and, you know, I guess Chris missed. I guess Chris moved or whatever, but my point is, man, when I was out there trying to do commentary,
yeah,
but I was so blown away by how badass the guys were in the ring and being able to sit there and focus and not have to worry about anything. Dude, it was such a treat. You remember that match?
I don't remember that, but I know how both of those guys are, like, especially Chris. I you know, I haven't been in there with him and knowing how his style of work.
Who's the guy that you got into the ring with and, like, just kind of blew you away as far as, hey, man, this dude just felt good?
Ooh, wow. You mean that I didn't already realize was that good?
No, I'll give you for an example.
Yeah.
You know how competitive the boys are?
Yeah.
And sometimes when I'm watching pro football, baseball, or NBA, you know, they'll ask, you know, one of the top guys, whether it's LeBron or Kevin Durant or someone like that, and they'll put over their opponent – but not very much.
Gotcha.
Because that's how competitive it is. Dude, same thing with the pro wrestling business. That's the way I always took it. So, you know, it's like when I was, you know, C. Sean, I was always in different federations. I was coming up in Dallas. I was in Tennessee. I was in Atlanta. He was in New York. I mean, he'd already been everywhere.
Yeah.
And he ended up in New York. You know, he was Shawn Michaels, a heartbreak kid. And, you know, you see how good he is. He's number one rated guy. And back in, because the business is so competitive, you think, oh, man, dude, he's just a spot guy.
Yeah.
He's a spot guy. Yeah, high spots. Yeah, you take away all the high spots, he ain't shit. Boy, all of a sudden, I got a chance to work with Sean.
Yeah.
And you come to that Jesus meeting real quick.
Yes.
This ain't just a high spot guy.
Yeah.
This guy is awesome in every single facet of the game, from timing to lockup to psychology, execution, selling, fire, whatever it needed to be. The dude had that plus 100% more. So working with Sean, I already knew he was good, but I didn't want to admit it because, dude, we're not competing for the same job.
Right.
But it's a competitive business. I didn't really give that guy props until I got into the ring with him, and that's when I knew what time it was. That's what I mean.
Yeah, and I can this might sound silly, but Ric Flair.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Because even though, okay, he's the greatest and all that, and it's just like, okay. Yeah, he's the greatest. And then you go, okay, now I know why he's the greatest.
Dude, if we was going back to one of those little television tapings I was just telling you about, and I do believe it was Anderson, South Carolina. It was myself, Ric Flair, I think it was Arn. It was like a six-man match. And back then, I was supposed to be the next Ric Flair, right?
Yeah.
I was more scientific wrestling, kind of like a chicken shit heel. Dude, all I was doing was copying Flair. You know, I didn't have his moves. I didn't have the turnbuckle flip over. I wasn't getting, you know, thrown off the top. I wasn't doing his move set.
Yeah, but the template kind of,
you
know.
I got labeled with being, and dude, no one ever wants to get labeled as the next anything.
That's right.
Especially Kiss Ric of
death.
Flair.
Kiss of death.
But that was the guy that had my crosshairs on.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden I'm thinking, man, this guy's getting older, and he wasn't real old at the time, and I was probably 26 or 7. And I'm thinking, hey, man, this guy ain't shit. Watching the bell rings, and we go out there, and it's a television taping, and Flair starts off the match, and he tagged either me in or Arn in, or I think he probably tagged in Arn. Dude, I'm sitting there on the apron watching this guy just do his, you know, apply his trade.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, yep. You know, there's a reason everybody's
right.
talking about this cat being as good as he is, and that's why the legend of Ric Flair is what it is. Dude, when you're just sitting there with your thumb up your ass on that apron watching the man do work,
yeah,
you don't want to be compared to that, because all of a sudden you tag in, it's like, well, what I do now?
Yeah,
Flair just tagged out. How am I going to top that shit?
Yeah, it's probably not actually.
How many tours did you work in Japan?
I don't know the exact. No, I'm going back in about a month for the first time in 16 years, by the way, but. Probably about maybe 20, something like that.
Did you ever get a chance to work with Benoit, Malenko, Guerrero?
Yeah, all of them. Yeah, because
really?
Yeah, the same year that Vince hired me was the same year that New Japan hired me. Masa Saito, may he rest in peace.
Yeah.
He was an awesome individual. I love that guy.
Awesome.
Yeah, he brought me there for the Super Junior Tournament '93, which had Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, Scorpio, Finley. My first match in New Japan was with Finley. It was great. Yeah, no, I worked with all those guys over there.
What were your thoughts in Japan when you got there? Because how long had you been working when you got there?
I've been working in like 3-4 years.
So mechanically, you're pretty proficient.
Yes.
You probably thought you were better than you were.
Way better. I thought I was way better than I was.
So how was it when you went over there and it was kind of a different atmosphere than being in the States because of the way that the Japanese crowd watches the matches, also with respect to the work that was going on there? Because, dude, those guys were working at a high level over there.
Yeah. Well, luckily, just, you know, the things I did were pretty spectacular for the time.
Yep.
So that made up for lack of, you know, any real direction in the match. It was kind of just, you know, go out there and I just kind of got my shit in and got to the finish, you know. But so when I first went over there, Steve, it wasn't your New Japan style company. It was Universal Pro, which was a Japanese lucha company. Like, they brought all the big name, like, lucha guys. That's where Asai, you know, Ultimo Dragon,
yeah,
that was his home company before he went to work for Tenryu. But it was a mix, kind of a hybrid lucha Japanese style.
Well, did you ever get into a situation where you had to follow a match? Because with your moveset, you could follow, you know, like a Dean Malenko, Chris, or Eddie. But dude, when I went, this was my first extended tour, and it didn't help that I took it was a 3-week tour, and I tore my tricep off my elbow on the third day. So all of a sudden, you know, we're out there in those first few shows, and on my first match over there, me and Arn had flown over from the United States on the same airplane. Ron Simmons was there, myself, Arn.
Mike Enos on that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Did well over there.
Yeah.
Mike Enos did well.
Yeah, because actually when he got back from that, he told me he was over there with you, and he was just singing your praises like there was no tomorrow.
Oh, that's cool. But anyway, man.
Sorry.
Me and Arn drank like fish on the way over there, and all of a sudden we go to our first television tape, and basically almost as soon as you check into the Keio Plaza, you're on a bus going to the show. God dang, dude, both of us blew sky high. It was hotter than blazes in that friggin' building, and I wasn't worth the shit. Of course, dude, I'd been working for 3 or 4 years.
Yes.
I didn't really know how to officially get over, whereas Arn had probably already been a 10-year veteran, and, dude, much more polished, much more seasoned, much more better at the presentation part, and there's a difference. So, you know, Arn got over. I was just trying to hustle along. But anyway, we got to some of those house shows over there. And whether it was Malenko working with Benoit Guerrero or any combination of those two. And I'd be out there watching every single match. And I'm sitting there in the back thinking, dude, how in the shit am I ever going to follow these guys? Because I can't do that. And it wasn't like Dean wasn't a guy that took a bunch of crazy bumps.
No.
Dean was just Mr. Scientific, man of a thousand holes, whatever his gimmick was. Benoit was just super intense, also could do a bunch of stuff off the top rope. Eddie, a master of everything, especially the subtleties and the nuances. But when those, when any of those combinations tied together, their chemistry was so off the charts. Here's how you follow a match like that. You don't.
Yeah.
They just did their shit.
Yeah.
So you go out there, whatever, as limited as I was back in, well, I never had a big move set anyway, but my key was just to be stunning Steve Austin, or I would have loved to go to Stone Cold.
Mm-hmm.
Never did. But you just got to stick to your wheelhouse. But until you figure it out, and it can't take you long to figure it out, but you better.
Yeah.
And go out there and just do your shit, because you ain't going to follow none of the guys that I just mentioned.
Right. Kind of like Kairi Sane and Shayna Baszler went out there and they didn't try to follow it doing the same. I mean, yeah. And Steve, I've never gone to Japan and not blown up on the first night. Like,
there's
blown.
Something about it.
Yes. It's the jet lag. It's something. And even the second night, it's a little bit of a problem. The third night, usually I start. If that's if I'm in singles matches, it's an issue. Like I can figure it out in a tag match.
Did you ever go over there and just get your clock clean? Because you know the deal was back in the day. He said, "Hey man, they'll tell you lay your shit in.
Yeah,
or these guys are going to take you to town.
Yeah."
And dude, I never got stiffed or strong armed by anybody. I never got tested by anybody.
Yeah.
But you know, we was working with Hiroshi Hase. What's the name?
Hirohase?
Yeah, Hirohase. Yeah.
One of the best they ever had over there.
Who was that? Kensuke Sasaki?
Kensuke Sasaki, Hashimoto, guys like that.
Yeah, all those guys.
Yeah.
And, the top guys work.
Yeah,
the
Chono.
To that mid, they're out there beating the trash out of each other. So it was funny, after I tore my tricep, that one night, a guy moved out of my way. He was supposed to. My arm bent too far up underneath me. So he started putting me in a lot of tags and six-mans to help me out.
Yeah.
Dude, back in the day, when you tore your tricep off your arm, you didn't go home.
Yeah.
You wrestled every single night.
Yeah.
And so I'll never forget sitting on that damn turnbuckle, sitting on the apron, standing on the apron with Arn Anderson as Ron Simmons tagged in. And Ron Simmons went in there, and dude, he was slingshotting, sending those guys in. You know, whatever he was calling, they were doing.
Yeah.
And those guys, their eyes were this big. And Arn just looked at me and goes, "God damn." He goes, "I'm glad I'm not on the other side with that other team." Ron was lighting everybody up. But I never.
Not hurting him.
No, not hurting him. But I mean, everybody knew that Ron was the man. No mess with Ron. But I never had to work strong style because, as much as I had heard about it, none of those guys ever tried to stiff me.
Because, those guys don't work like that. That's a big misnomer. Like you said, those younger guys, and I think it might have something to do with once the people care about you and they're making that much noise in your match, you don't have to pull all that stuff out, right? Like, you don't have to kill each other. The occasional well-placed potato, might... I never minded it, but like when people are making that much noise, like I think, a lot of times, well, for me, I remember like when the crowd would be silent, like I would get kind of like panicky, frantic.
Hey, we lost them.
Yeah. And then you try to do whatever, you start hurting each other or.
And I was watching I get on YouTube almost every single night, and I either watch music or old matches. And I still go back, and I watch a lot of stuff that Stan Hansen did and Bruiser Brody. And when they're working with a lot of guys, they're beating the shit out of the guys. I mean, they're laying, and they were the kings.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, man, it was Stan Hansen and Brody versus Terry and Dory.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, there was so much respect there.
I saw that.
Those guys have been down the road so many times together. But everything looked good, but it looked like even a more professional product because they weren't beating the shit out of each other.
Yeah.
So it actually looked better. But man, dude, the whole climate changed because the shit was still on. It was Hansen and Brody who damn near owned Japan, and the Funks who were, I dare say, right at that
right
same
there.
Level.
Yeah.
Especially respect-wise at the very same level, but Hansen and Brody were such a force. I think they had a little bit of the upper hand, but dude, when you go back and watch, those matches are nothing but pure badass
work. it might have something new, like, okay, when Hanson and Brody are working with the Japanese guys, there's a little bit of a language barrier, maybe, and they feel like they got to go out there and fight for it more. Whereas, like, you know, when you're working with the other guys, like, we're trying to work for the match. I think there's different mentality. Like, in Mexico, there's a different mentality down there, Steve. Like, you know how we have this thing, like, okay, we're going to work for the match. Like, I'll go into the match, like, trying to figure out how I can make my opponent look good, coming up with stuff, thinking of what their, you know, their signature moves are and trying to come up with cool stuff for that. And they're doing the same for me. Down in Mexico, maybe in Japan, I think the mentality is me, me, me. Like, right. What can I do to make me look good?
Right.
And I think it matters.
One more break here for a minute, because I've been thinking, why can a car park itself these days, but we have to drive across town to take a test drive if we want to try out a new car? And why can we get approved for a mortgage in lightning speed, but buying a new car takes an entire day? Well, our friends at Hyundai have wondered about these things and are making it all possible now with the all-new Shopper Assurance that includes transparent pricing for convenience, because knowing the price is always better than guessing. Flexible test drive that comes to you. Custom fit to a preferred time and location for added convenience. Streamlined purchase for efficiency, where you can fill all your paperwork out online, and 3-day worry-free exchange. Car buying made easier. It's possible with Hyundai Shopper Assurance. Visit HyundaiUSA.com/Shopper Assurance for all the information. I've been talking about Bruiser Brody. I got to give a shout out real quick to Blue Meanie.
Yeah.
Brian Heffern just sent me a documentary of Bruiser Brody. I've been talking about Brody on the podcast every here and there. And he just sent me a documentary on Brody because I didn't think there was ever one made on him. So I got to check that out. So, Meanie, I appreciate you sending the Bruiser Brody documentary to me. You'll hear about it here on the podcast here. And
it's new, right?
I guess it's new.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's new. Dude, I was just listening to, I get on, like I said, I get on YouTube a lot, and I was listening to Tony Atlas retell that story about him dying.
Yeah.
The Dutch tell that story. Did you ever go to Puerto Rico?
I did.
Did you like it?
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Like, there was a couple of times where, like, if I ever have to ask for my money, I don't like it.
Well, dude.
And then one time, so then the one time when I did have to sit there at the end of the night, wait to ask for my money, I got that guy coming in and asking me if he could talk to me in the shower, like it's some kind of a goddamn joke.
Oh,
and I'm like, we can go in the shower as long as I'm gonna get my money.
Yeah.
You know, like, is this supposed to be funny or something? Because, I mean, I'm not particularly concerned. It's just stupid.
Asking for your money in Puerto Rico in a shower is a little bit different than going to PWG and asking for your money in a dressing room.
Right.
And I'm giving a shout out to PWG. I'm just trying to give a for instance.
Yeah.
It can be pretty intimidating over there.
Yeah, sure.
Dude, because, dude, you're in no man's land.
Yeah.
You ain't America.
And
all of a sudden, dude, the climate over there is pretty damn tough.
Yeah, so you want me to tell you a real quick story about my last experience here?
I'd love to hear a story
about
my last experience.
Yeah, I got a call, and I can't even remember who the promotion was. There's different little things pop up here and there. Somebody with money also wants to be a promoter. So it was down there, and Road Dog couldn't make the show. And like it was like a buddy system, hey, can you help replace me? So not only was the money like not what I wanted the money to be, I was like, fine, I'll go do it, but I'm getting my money before I put my gear on. Okay, no problem. I get down there, and Billy's down there. I'm teaming with Billy. And come time for the show, then getting close to the match, you go, amigo, like, the match is coming up. Where's my money? Oh, we'll get after it. The club said, no, ain't happening. I'm not putting my gear on until I get my money. And there was a big to-do over it. Yeah. And they were pissed. And I got my money, and there was ones, fives. You know, like, because I looked out the door, you know, into the crowd, and there was none.
Yeah.
So I'm like, if I don't get this money, might not ever get it. Yeah. And I got it. But I was really happy that Billy was there with me. Let's just put it that way.
Billy's great to have us back up, because Billy can hurt you just by shaking your hand.
That's right.
That big brick-handed sorry bastard. I know he listens to the podcast.
Yeah.
I always look forward to shaking his hand, because we've had this feud going for years and years just with the handshake, and we used to travel together. Did you hear the story when I jumped on his ass in New Orleans?
What do you mean you jumped on him?
Man, me and Billy, we used to travel together, and he's one of the greatest traveling partners I ever had. Every time, you know, if he was getting to rent a car, he'd show up, and there'd be a pack of Levi gear, the Red Man, on the seat with a bottle of water. And he'd always have some good country music CDs going. And so we'd be riding down the road. And you ever remember going to New Orleans and going to the Daiquiri Hut?
No.
All the boys used to go to the Daiquiri Hut. And I think those drinks had a little bit more than whatever they make daiquiris with. But they were pretty stout.
Mm-hmm.
So we go in New Orleans, we wrestle, I can't remember the name of the building, and there ain't a hotel room in sight. That whole friggin' town is booked. Somehow, some way, we'd been a Daiquiri Hunt, we're shit-faced, we find a damn hotel. It's the last hotel room in town, and it's a big-ass room, almost probably a little bit bigger than this area we're in right now. This is a big-ass apartment. And then there's a bedroom over there. And so, man, all of a sudden, we opened the door. We'd put our gear up already. And I had my gold necklace on that Brian Pillman had given me.
Yeah.
And, man, as soon as Billy opened that door, I jumped on his back. We started wrestling around. Dude, this is a damn near shoot. Now I was working.
Yeah.
Billy, of course, was trying to shoot
me. Yeah.
And that sorry son of a bitch ended up getting me in a bad, you know, big side headlock.
Uh-huh.
People think of a side headlock as a work move. Horse shit. Not when Billy Gunn has your head squashed like a grape up against his goddamn ribs. And so finally I said, all right, God dang it. I said, shit, enough. I said, he goes, you done? I said, yeah, man, I'm done. So he let me go. Jumped right back on his ass.
Yeah.
Beating the shit out of him for a little bit. And sure enough, he grabbed me that side headlock again. He goes, God damn it. He goes, I'm tired of this. Blown up, tired, drunk, already been working on the loop. And he goes, are you done? I said, yeah. He goes, you swear on your kids? I said, yeah. So he let me go. I jumped back on him again.
Damn.
He goes, I thought you swore on your kids. I said, I got a billy goat. Like a kid.
Yeah.
Billy goat. Is,
gotcha.
Yeah. So anyway, I jumped on his ass again. Anyway, long story short, we finally stopped wrestling and shit like that. We go to the shop the next day, and I'm in a dressing room like, I'm grabbing my neck. Dude, you ever wore jewelry and all of a sudden you're trying to find your shit and it ain't on? You keep grabbing your neck. Man, that's my favorite necklace in the world.
Yeah.
Turns out we had lost it. During all the roughhousing, it had fallen behind one of the chest or drawers gimmicks, whatever you call it, there in the hotel room. And, hell, I thought one of the damn people that cleaned up the hotel or stole it or whatever.
Yeah.
Sure enough, we were back at the hotel the same night and end up finding my gold necklace behind the gimmick after I'd raised a bunch of hell.
Oh, place. Man.
The moral to the story is if you're traveling with Billy Gunn, don't fuck with him.
Right.
Leave him alone.
Yeah.
But that's just been, I drew a long story. I beat it.
Those takedown tournaments and the drunk takedown tournaments used to happen all the time, Steve.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I remember in San Francisco one time, it was like my first road trip in. No, it wasn't my first one because Scott Levy had been in. No, it was my first one because we started together. Anyways, it was Kurt, Lex, Scott Hall. Like, I remember Scott Hall came up behind Lex, and Lex just accidentally threw Scott into a bed of rocks or something. And Scott's like, and just it would Kurt going behind Nash, taking Nash down. It was just all just a big drunken mess. And it happened all the time. It was like a bunch of big kids.
But it was the thing, like, God dang, man, we was riding up and down the road back in the day, and it's like, you just do stupid shit to entertain yourselves.
Yep.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen, I mean, we were always messed up when we did that. It was never.
Oh, yeah, dude, I was blasted out of my gourd.
It's the only reason I didn't get hurt.
Yeah, if I'd have been stone cold sober, I'd never have jumped on Billy Gunn's ass.
Yeah.
But anyway, man, I'm going to jump out and get back on the mean streets of Los Angeles because I told my wife that I would take her to a certain destination tonight where they have a pretty good margarita. But I'm going to make a case that my margarita is so good right now, I might not even need to leave the house. So,
your margarita game's on point right now?
Dude, I probably got the best margarita in the United States of America. As a matter of fact, Forbes, the magazine you heard of, Forbes,
yeah.
Right? They wanted to interview me about my margarita mix.
Is this another, you doing a moonsault story?
Hey, where can people find you and listen to your podcast? Because the X-Pac 12360 show is kicking ass, and I know you've got a great guest coming up this Tuesday.
Yeah, I just don't know who it is yet.
Me and Sean were talking before we went on air. I've been doing this so long, and Sean, how long have you been doing this now?
2 years. I just had my 100th episode.
Congrats.
Thanks.
But it's almost like you feel like you're inconvenienced and one of your friends can be on your show, and sometimes I feel like that, and I feel like, you know, I could ask anybody in the world, but I just kind of don't ask anybody because I don't want to put anybody out.
That's how I feel too. But, you know, you can always ask me. I'm always, like, happy to talk about wrestling.
Oh, I know.
With you.
You still enjoying it?
Yes. Yeah, I do.
Where can people find you at? And then what's another wrestling gig or anything you got coming up as far as appearances? Talk about the podcast first.
It's on We're at Westwood One now, but and you can just find it on all the apps that, you know, that people go, pretty much all of them that people go find their podcasts on. We're still with AfterBuzz TV for the video. However, I have my own, I just started my own separate YouTube channel, and it's youtube.com/XPOC. And all the shows are going to live on there from now on. And all the interviews from the old shows are on there. They're up on my new YouTube channel. And there's going to be some other stuff I'm going to be putting on there, too.
YouTube has been around for a long time, man. Yeah. It's starting to turn into the wave of the future, man. Everybody's on YouTube.
Yeah, right now. I mean, there's probably some other things that are probably the cutting edge thing to get onto, but I'm not sure what they are yet.
Yeah, but YouTube's just, like, easy to do.
Easy, yeah.
That's what I like about it.
Yeah.
My wife gets pissed off at me because she goes to sleep way earlier than I do. So I'll be sitting there in bed if it's wrestling, watching musicians or whatever, and I watch the same shit over and over again, and she'll get out of bed, maybe go to the bathroom, or just wake up because I'm making too much noise, and she'll kind of mumble, "Are you watching that again?" And then I'll get up in the morning, and she goes, "Were you watching that video again?" And I say, "Yeah." Dude, here, I'll give you one. You ever heard of that band called The Silvers?
The Silvers.
They were there around shit back in the 70s. Hotline.
Yeah.
I watched The Silvers Hotline video. I didn't Boogie Fever after that, but I watched that video damn near every single night.
What's up with that?
I just love that song. They were just epic performers.
Yeah.
And she goes, "Why do you watch that every single night?" I don't know. I'm I dig that performance. Yeah. And a lot of other shit I watch as well. But I watch the same shit over and over again, the same matches. I mean, I still got the Arn and Ole against the Rock and Roll Express that I watch damn near every night. Dusty and Man with the Hands of Stone.
Ronnie Garvin?
Yeah. Against Flair and Arn. So I just got my – I think that's happened out of Greensboro as well. Anyway, that's all the stupid shit that I'm watching on YouTube.
It's great.
Yeah, well, it's great. I like it.
Oh, that reminds me. Kevin Undergaro and I, we put a few – we're doing this show. We just putting them in the can right now. It's Wrestling Rabbit Hole. And it's just picking a subject and then going YouTube rabbit hole and just like doing like Mystery Science Theater, you know, commentary over it, explaining some things, you know, like just the things that I know about.
Yeah.
So we did Haystacks Calhoun, and I forget who else we did, but anyways, it's all old school people right now.
Dude, thanks for having me over at your crib and doing the show.
I'm always happy to come on the show, Steve.
We're out.
Hey everyone, it's Scott Braun and Kelly Nash from MLB Network here with our new show, Baseball and Chill, exclusively on Podcast One Sportsnet.
Kick back with us each week as we cover all of the action on and off the diamond with player interviews and in-depth storyline analysis of what's happening in Major League Baseball.
Relax with us every Tuesday on Baseball and Chill right here on Podcast One. Download and subscribe to new episodes exclusively on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app. Also, rate us. Leave us feedback. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, we would.
All right, everybody, give me the go-home cue. It's time to wrap up this podcast right off in the sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank Sean Waltman for being my guest on the show and allowing me to come over to his crib and shoot the breeze with him. I know he was dead dog tired from going to Chicago, Illinois, and I had a good time seeing him. Traffic was a bitch, though. No, that's a whole other story for a whole other day. But anyway, like I said, packing up, getting ready to head over to Nevada for my antelope hunt. Ted Fowler is joining us on the podcast for Thursday. You guys have emailed emailed me a bunch of topics and questions for Ted Fowler 361, and we will see what the topic of discussion ends up being. And I will also continue to tweak and work on my margarita formula, and we'll release that as soon as I perfect it, because I am close, oh so close, to getting this son of a bitch ready. Hey man, ProWrestlingTees.com/Steve Austin has all my Broken Skull Ranch shit. I need to come up with some Nevada designs and just have not done so yet, but I am. And I was talking to Rob Crocksall down there at El Segundo Brewing Company. They just finished last weekend a brand new batch of Broken Skull IPA. So stop by the brewery, get some right out of the tap, or you can find it at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you're in Southern California. If you ain't in that region, you're shit out of luck, and you're missing out on the best damn IPA in the United States of America, and that is the absolute truth, and that's the bottom line. I'm proud of this last batch. It is absolutely off the charts. Go by the brewery, 140 Main Street in El Segundo, and get yourself some. Hey, man, if you're looking to get a badass pocket knife, I got two of them for your ass. The Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife and a new Cold Steel Working Man's Knife, both at my new Amazon store. Just go to amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin, or go to Cold Steel Knives website and check out all the badass knives. I want to say a big thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially betonline.ag, TrueCar, Geico, Tecovas Boots, and Hyundai USA. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. And if you need more info on my sponsors, check out the show description to this episode for details. Folks, I am on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at Steve Austin BSR. And until next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.